Hello, everyone. We're continuing on with Thomas Brooks' Precious Remedies Against Satan's Devices. We're going through devices he uses to draw the soul to sin. And last time we did 7 and 8. 7 is making the soul bold to venture upon occasions of sin or being around places that could entice to sin or people that could entice to sin. And then that it's not such a big deal. And then device 8 is representing outward mercies for men that walk in sin and outward miseries that they don't have when they walk in ways of sin. So you can be free from outward miseries if you walk in sin, and that's a device Satan uses. And so, Lord willing, here we're going on to device 9, and I will plan to do that right now. All right, the 9th device that Satan has to draw the soul to sin is device number 9, by presenting to the soul the crosses, losses, reproaches, sorrows, and sufferings that do daily attend those that walk in the ways of holiness. Says Satan, do not you see that there are none in the world that are so vexed, afflicted, and tossed as those that walk more circumspectly and holily than their neighbors? They are a byword at home and a reproach abroad. Their miseries come in upon them like Job's messengers, one upon the neck of another, and there is no end of their sorrows and troubles. Therefore, says Satan, you were better to walk in the ways that are less troublesome and less afflicted, though they be more sinful. For who but a madman would spend his days in sorrow, vexation, and affliction, when it may be prevented by walking in the ways that I, Satan, set before him? Now the remedies against this device of Satan are these. Remedy number 1. The first remedy against this device of Satan is solemnly to consider that all the afflictions that do attend the people of God are such as shall turn to the profit and glorious advantage of the people of God. They shall discover that filthiness and vileness in sin that yet the soul has never seen. It was a speech of a German divine, Gaspar Olivianus. In his sickness, he said, in this disease I have learned how great God is and what the evil of sin is. I never knew the purpose what God was before, nor what sin meant till now. Afflictions are a crystal glass wherein the soul has the clearest sight of the ugly face of sin. In this glass the soul comes to see sin to be but a bittersweet. Yea, in this glass, the soul comes to see sin not only to be an evil, but to be the greatest evil in the world, to be an evil far worse than hell itself. Again, they shall contribute to the mortifying and purging away of their sins. These afflictions, Isaiah 1:15 and 27, 8 and 9. Afflictions are God's furnace by which he cleanses his people from their dross. Affliction is a fire to purge out our dross and to make virtue shine. It is a potion to carry away ill humors, better than all of the Benedictum Medicamentum or something, as the physicians call them. The footnote is, in the times of peace, our armor is rusty. In times of war, it is bright. Aloes kill worms. Colds and frosts do destroy vermin. So do afflictions the corruptions that are in our hearts. The Jews, under all the prophets' threatenings, retained their idols, but after their Babylonian captivity, it is observed, there have been no idols found amongst them. Again, afflictions are sweet preservatives to keep the saints from sin, which is a greater evil than hell itself. As Job spake, surely it is meet to be said unto God, I have borne chastisement, I will not offend any more. That which I see not, teach thou me. If I have done iniquity, I will do no more. Once have I spoken foolishly, yea, twice, I will do so no more. Job 34, 31, and 32. The burnt child dreads the fire. Says the soul under the rod of affliction, sin is but a bitter sweet. And for the future, I intend, by the strength of Christ, that I will not buy repentance at so dear a rate. The footnote, salt brine preserves from putrefaction, and salt marshes keep the sheep from the rot. so do afflictions the saints from sin. The ball in the emblem, that may be a body of water, says, the harder you beat me down in affliction, the higher I shall bound in affection toward heaven and heavenly things, like a ball underwater, I think. The rabbis, to scare their scholars from sin, were wont or often to tell them that sin made God's head ache, and saints under the rod of affliction have found by woeful experience that sin makes not only their heads, but their hearts ache also. Augustine, by wandering out of the way, escaped one that lay in wait and mischief him. If afflictions did not put us out of our way, we should many times meet with some sin or other that would mischief our precious souls. Again, they will work the saints to be more fruitful in holiness. Hebrews 12:10-11. But he afflicts us for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. The flowers smell sweetest after a shower. Vines bear the better for bleeding. The walnut tree is most fruitful when most beaten. Saints spring and thrive most internally when they are most externally afflicted. Afflictions are called by some the mother of virtue. Manasseh, his chain, was more profitable to him than his crown. Luther could not understand some scriptures till he was in affliction. The Christ cross is no letter, and yet that taught him more than all the letters in the row. God's house of correction is his school of instruction. All the stones that came about Stephen's ears did but knock him closer to Christ, the cornerstone. The waves did but lift Noah's ark nearer to heaven, and the higher the waters grew, the more near the ark was lifted up to heaven. Afflictions do lift up the soul to more rich, clear, and full enjoyments of God. Hosea 2:14, behold, I will allure her into the wilderness and speak comfortably to her. Or rather, as the Hebrew has it, I will earnestly and vehemently speak to her heart. The footnote, it is reported of Tiberius the emperor that passing by a place where he saw a cross lying in the ground upon a marble stone, and causing the stone to be digged up, he found a great deal of treasure under the cross. So many a precious saint has found much spiritual and heavenly treasure under the crosses they have met withal. God makes afflictions to be but inlets to the soul's more sweet and full enjoyment of his blessed self. When was it that Stephen saw the heavens open and Christ standing at the right hand of God, but when the stones were about his ears and there was but a short step between him and eternity? And when did God appear in glory to Jacob, but in the day of his troubles, when the stones were his pillows and the ground his bed and the hedges his curtains and the heavens his canopy? Then he saw the angels of God ascending and descending in their glistering robes. The plant in Nazianzen grows with cutting. Being cut, it flourishes. It contends with the axe. It lives by dying, and by cutting, it grows. So do saints by their afflictions that do befall them. They gain more experience of the power of God supporting them, of the wisdom of God directing them, of the grace of God refreshing and cheering them, and of the goodness of God quieting and quickening of them to a greater love to holiness and to a greater delight in holiness and to a more vehement pursuing after holiness. I have read of a fountain that at noonday is cold and at midnight it grows warm. So many a precious soul is cold Godwards and heavenwards and holiness words in the day of prosperity, that grow warm Godwards and heavenwards and holiness words in the midnight of adversity. Again, afflictions serve to keep the hearts of the saints humble and tender, Lamentations 3:19-20. Remembering my affliction and my misery, the wormwood and the gall, my soul has them still in remembrance and is humbled in me, or bowed down in me, as the original has it. So David, when he was under the rod, could say, I was dumb, I opened not my mouth, because thou didst it. Psalm 39:4. I have read of one, I guess it's Gregory Nazianzen, who, when anything fell out prosperously, would read over the Lamentations of Jeremiah, and that kept his heart tender, humble, and low. Prosperity does not contribute more to the puffing up the soul than adversity does to the bowing down of the soul. This the saints by experience find, and therefore they can kiss and embrace the cross as others do the world's crown. The footnote, the more precious odors and the purest spices are beaten and bruised, the sweeter scent and the savor they send abroad, so do saints when they are afflicted. Again, afflictions, they serve to bring the saints nearer to God and to make them more importunate and earnest in prayer with God. Before I was afflicted, I went astray, but now have I kept thy word. It is good for me that I have been afflicted, that I might learn thy statutes. I will be to Ephraim as a lion, and as a young lion to the house of Judah. I, even I, will tear and go away. I will take away, and none shall rescue him. I will go and return to my place till they acknowledge their offense and seek my face. In their affliction they will seek me early. And so they did. Come, they say, and let us return unto the Lord, for he hath torn and he will heal us. He hath smitten and he will bind us up. After 2 days he will revive us. In the third day he will raise us up, and we shall live in his sight. Those were several verses. So when God had hedged up their way with thorns, then they say, I will go and return to my first husband, for then it was with me better than now. Hosea 2, 6 and 7. Ah, the joy, the peace, the comfort, the delight, and content that did attend us when we kept close communion with God does bespeak our return to God. We will return to our first husband, for then was it with us better than now. When Tiribazus, a noble Persian, was arrested, he drew out his sword and defended himself. But when they told him that they came to carry him to be king, he willingly yielded. So though a saint may at first stand a little out, yet when he remembers that afflictions are to carry nearer to God, he yields and kisses the rod of affliction. Afflictions are like the prick at the nightingale's breast that awakes her and puts her upon her sweet and delightful singing. Again, afflictions, they serve to revive and recover decayed graces. They inflame that love that is cold, and they quicken that faith that is decaying, and they put life into those hopes that are withering, and spirits into those joys and comforts that are languishing. The footnote, most men are like a top that will not go unless you whip it, and the more you whip it, the better it goes. He says, you know how to apply that story. They that are in adversity, says Luther, do better understand the scriptures, but those that are in prosperity read them as a verse in Ovid, without paying a lot of care or attention, I guess. Bees are killed with honey, but quickened with vinegar. The honey of prosperity kills our graces, but the vinegar of adversity quickens our graces. Musk, says one, when it has lost its sweetness, if it be put into the sink amongst filth, it recovers. So that recovers it. So do afflictions recover and revive decayed graces. The more saints are beaten with the hammer of afflictions, the more they are made the trumpets of God's praises, and the more are their graces revived and quickened. Adversity abases the loveliness of the world that might entice us. It abates the lustiness of the flesh within that might incite us to folly and vanity, lust being like corrupt desires in our hearts, not just in a sensual or sexual way. And it abets the spirit in his quarrel to the two former, which tends much to the reviving and recovering of decayed graces. So it helps the spirit in the conflict against our carnal man. Now, suppose afflictions and troubles attend the ways of holiness, yet seeing that they all work for the great profit and singular advantage of the saints, let no soul be so mad as to leave an afflicted way of holiness to walk in a smooth path of wickedness. Remedy number two, the second remedy against this device of Satan, is solemnly to consider that all the afflictions that do befall the saints do only reach their worser part. They reach not, they hurt not, their noble part, or their best part, which is the soul. All the arrows stick in the target, they reach not the conscience, 1 Peter 3:13. And who shall harm you if ye be followers of that which is good, says the apostle, that is, none shall harm you. They may thus and thus afflict you, but they shall never harm you. The footnote, the Christian soldier shall ever be master of the day. He may suffer death, but not conquest. It was the speech of a heathen when, as by the tyrant, he was commanded to be put into a mortar and to be beaten to pieces with an iron pestle. He cries out to his persecutors, "You do but beat the vessel, the case, the husk of Anaxarchus," which I guess was his name, "and you do not beat me." His body was to him but a case or a husk. He counted his soul himself, which they could not reach. He says, "You are wise and know how to apply it." Socrates said of his enemies, "They may kill me, but they cannot hurt me." So afflictions may kill us, but they cannot hurt us. They may take away my life, but they cannot take away my God, my Christ, my crown. Remedy number three, the third remedy against this device of Satan, is seriously to consider that the afflictions that do attend the saints in the ways of holiness are but short and momentary. Sorrow may abide for a night, but joy comes in the morning, Psalm 30, verse 5. This short storm will end in an everlasting calm. This short night will end in a glorious day that shall never have end. The footnote, there are none but God's afflicted ones that have not their intermissions, respites, and breathings while under their short and momentary afflictions. When God's hand is on your back, let your hand be on your mouth, for though the affliction may be sharp, it shall be short. And of course, this is relative to eternity. It is but a very short time between grace and glory, between our title to the crown and our wearing the crown, between our right to the heavenly inheritance and our possession of the heavenly inheritance. 14,000 years to the Lord is but as one day. What is your life but a shadow, a bubble, a flower, a post, a span, a dream, etc.? Yea, so small a while does the hand of the Lord rest upon us, that Luther cannot get diminutives enough to extenuate it, for he calls it a very little cross that we bear. The prophet in Isaiah 26:20 said, "The indignation does not pass, but overpass." The sharpness, shortness, and suddenness of it is set forth by the travail of a woman, John 16:21, and that is a sweet scripture. "For ye have need of patience, that after ye have done the will of God, ye might receive the promise. For yet a little while, he that shall come, and will not tarry." Hebrews 10:36-37. And there was a quote, a little while. When Athanasius's friends came to bewail him because of his misery and banishment, he said, "It is but a little cloud and will quickly be gone." It will be but as a day before God will give his afflicted ones beauty for ashes, the oil of gladness for the spirit of heaviness, before he will turn all your sighing into singing, all your lamentations into consolations, your sackcloth into silks, ashes into ointments, and your fasts into everlasting feasts, etc. Remedy number four, the fourth remedy against this device of Satan, is seriously to consider that the afflictions that do befall the saints are such as proceed from God's dearest love. Footnote, Austin or Augustine says or asks, "If he were beloved, how came he to be sick? So are wicked men apt to say, because they know not that corrections are pledges of adoption and badges of our sonship. God had one son without sin, but none without sorrow. As many as I love, I rebuke and chasten." Revelation 3:19. "Saints," says God, "think not that I hate you because I thus chide you. He that escapes reprehension may suspect his adoption. God had one son without corruption, but no son without correction. A gracious soul may look through the darkest cloud and see a God smiling on him. We must look through the anger of his correction to the sweetness of his countenance, and as by the rainbow, we see the beautiful image of the sun's light in the midst of a dark and waterish cloud. When Munster lay sick and his friends asked him how he did and how he felt himself, he pointed to his sores and ulcers whereof he was full and said, "These are God's gems and jewels wherewith he decks his best friends, and to me they are more precious than all the gold and silver in the world." A soul at first conversion is but rough cast, but God by afflictions does square and fit and fashion it for that glory above, which does speak to them out to flow from precious love. It shows that it flows from love. Therefore, the afflictions that do attend the people of God should be no bar to holiness, nor no motive to draw the soul to ways of wickedness. Remedy number 5, the fifth remedy against this device of Satan, is solemnly to consider that it is our duty and glory not to measure afflictions by the smart, but by the end or purpose. When Israel was dismissed out of Egypt, it was with gold and earrings, Exodus 11:3. So the Jews were dismissed out of Babylon with gifts, jewels, and all the necessary utensils, Ezra 1:7-11. Look more at the latter end of a Christian than the beginning of his afflictions. Consider the patience of Job and what end the Lord made with him. Look not upon Lazarus lying at the dive's door, but lying in Abraham's bosom. Look not to the beginning of Joseph, who was so far from his dream that the sun and moon should reverence him, that for 2 years he was cast where he could see neither sun, moon, nor stars. But behold him at last made ruler over Egypt. Look not upon David, as there was but a step between him and death, nor as he was envied by some and slighted and despised by others, but behold him seated in his royal throne and dying in his bed of honor, and his son Solomon and all his glistering nobles about him. Afflictions, they are but as a dark entry into your father's house. They are but as a dirty lane to a royal palace. Now tell me, souls, whether it be not very great madness to shun the ways of holiness and to walk in the ways of wickedness because of those afflictions that do attend the ways of holiness. In the footnote, afflictions, they are but our father's goldsmiths who are working to add pearls to our crowns. Tiberius saw paradise when he walked upon hot burning coals. Herodotus said of the Assyrians, "Let them drink nothing but wormwood all their life long. When they die, they shall swim in honey." He says, "You are wise and know how to apply it." Remedy number 6. The sixth remedy against this device of Satan is seriously to consider that the design of God in all the afflictions that do befall them is only to try them. It is not to wrong them, nor to ruin them, as ignorant souls are apt to think. "He knoweth the way that I take, and when he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold," says patient Job 23, verse 10. So in Deuteronomy 8, verse 2, "And thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble thee and to prove thee, and to know what was in thy heart, whether thou wouldst keep his commandments or no." God afflicted them thus that he might make known to themselves and others what was in their hearts. When fire is put to green wood, there comes out abundance of watery stuff that before appeared not. When the pond is empty, the mud, filth, and toads come to light. The footnote, the king of Arakim in Scaliger tries her whom he means to marry by sweating. If they be sweet, he marries them. If not, then he rejects them. And he says, you may easily make the application. He's just using that as an example. The snow covers many a dunghill. So does prosperity many a rotten heart. It is easy to wade in a warm bath, and every bird can sing in a sunshine day, etc. Hard weather tries what health we have. Afflictions try what sap we have, what grace we have. Withered leaves soon fall off in windy weather. Rotten boughs quickly break with heavy weights, etc. You are wise and know how to apply it. Afflictions are like pinching frosts that will search us. Where we are most unsound, we shall soonest complain, and where most corruptions lie, we shall most shrink. We try metal by knocking. If it sound well, then we like it. So God tries his by knocking, and if under knocks they yield a pleasant sound, God will turn their night into day, and their bitter into sweet, and their cross into a crown, and they shall bear that voice, "Arise and shine, for the glory of the Lord is risen upon thee, and the favors of the Lord are flowing in on thee." Isaiah 60, verse 1. The footnote, dunghills that are raked send out a filthy steam, ointments a sweet perfume. This is applicable to sinners and saints under the rod of affliction. Remedy number 7. The seventh remedy against this device of Satan is solemnly to consider that the afflictions, wrath, and misery that do attend the ways of wickedness are far greater and heavier than those are that do attend the ways of holiness. The footnote, sin oftentimes makes men insensible to the wrath of the Almighty. Sin transforms many a man, as it were, into those bears in Pliny that could not be stirred with the sharpest prickles, or those fishes in Aristotle that though they have spears thrust into their sides, yet they awake not. Oh, the galling, girding, lashing, and gnawing of conscience that do attend souls in a way of wickedness. The wicked, says Isaiah, are like the troubled sea when it cannot rest, whose waters cast up the mire and dirt. There is no peace to the wicked, says my God. There are snares in all their mercies, and curses and crosses do attend all their comforts, both at home and abroad. What is a fine suit of clothes with the plague in it? And what is a golden cup when there is poison at the bottom? Or what is a silken stocking with a broken leg in it? The curse of God, the wrath of God, the hatred of God, and the fierce indignation of God do always attend sinners walking in a way of wickedness. Turn to Deuteronomy 28 and read from verse 15 to the end of the chapter, and Leviticus 26 and read from 14 to the end of the chapter, and then you shall see how the curse of God haunts the wicked, as it were a fury in all his ways. In the city it attends him, so in all the person's ways, the wicked person's ways. In the city it attends him, in the country hovers over him. Coming in it accompanies him, going forth it follows him, and in travel it is his comrade. It fills his store with strife and mingles the wrath of God with his sweetest morsels. It is a moth in his wardrobe, murrain among his cattle, mildew in the field, rot among sheep, and oft times makes the fruit of his loins his greatest vexation and confusion, which I assume he means his children or offspring. There is no solid joy, nor lasting peace, nor pure comfort that attends sinners in their sinful ways. The footnote, sin brings in sorrow and sickness, etc. The rabbis say that when Adam tasted the forbidden fruit, the head ached. Sirens are said to sing continuously while they live, but to roar horribly when they die. So do the wicked. There is a sword of vengeance that does every moment hang over their heads by a small thread. And what joy and content can attend such souls if the eye of conscience be but so far open as to see the sword? Ah, the horrors and terrors, the tremblings and shakings that attend their souls. All right, that is the end of device number 9. May we ponder these things, and may God apply them to us. Lord willing, we'll go on to device 10 next time. But until then, go in a desire of holiness and living as unto God. And Lord willing, we'll talk to you again soon.